evil appears to carry the seed of its own destruction. In the long run, right defeated is stronger than evil triumphant. Historian Charles A. Beard, when asked what major lessons he had learned from history, answered like this. He said, first, whom the gods would destroy, they must first make mad with power. Second, the mills of God grind slowly, yet they grind exceedingly small. Third, the bee fertilizes the flower it robs. And fourth, when it's dark enough, you can see the stars. Welcome back to another episode of Morning Coffee. My name is Rick Alexander. Lately I've been feeling great. A little less human. A little less human. A little less human. Lately I've been feeling great. Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome back to our five-part series covering Strength to Love, the work of Martin Luther King Jr. Today, I want to talk about why it is that love does win. You know, that quote that I used to kick this episode off by Burke, it's important to understand that he's a historian, right? So he's not a preacher and he's not a motivational speaker, and he's just observing history and he's reporting on what he finds. And what he's found is that evil does seem to have this self-defeating quality, so it can never win ultimately. So I want to kick today's episode off talking, reading a paragraph from this sermon by Martin Luther King Jr. called The Death of Evil Upon the Seashore. He says, is anything more obvious than the presence of evil in the universe? Its nagging, prehensile tentacles project into every level of human existence. We may debate the origin of evil, but only a victim of superficial optimism would debate its reality. Evil is stark, grim, and colossally real. You know, I would encourage you to not look away from evil, right? To understand how it actually works. How do these really, really bad ideas end up possessing people and leading them to things like school shootings, or leading them to things like slinging hate to a group of people that are just different than you for some reason? And the reason I think it's really important to look at something like that is to understand that you have the capacity for evil just as much as you have the capacity for good. Earlier in this year, I started doing a lot of work on different revolutionaries. Martin Luther King Jr. was one of them. Jesus was one of them. Socrates was one of them. And I was starting to write about it. And I had to ask myself, why is it that every culture's norms were at one point the dying claim of some revolutionary? And so we could take Christianity, the school of thought and belief system that Martin Luther King Jr. came out, and it's painfully obvious, right? Like, you guys have heard of the term Roman Catholic. The reason that you've heard of that is because the Romans who persecuted Jesus killed him for what could essentially be considered no reason at all, right? Just causing trouble. Same reason Socrates was killed, actually, just because he was leading people to believe in themselves, which inherently had them often thinking in opposition to the doctrines of the state at the time, right? So the Catholic Church, Catholic meaning universal, formed in the second century, and it became Roman Catholic in the middle of, I think it was like 345, when the Roman Empire actually adopted Catholicism as the predominant religion in the state, right? And so you have to understand, this is an absolutely incredibly wild and weird turn of events, because the state that killed the person that founded the religion ends up adopting the religion. And so you have to ask why, right? Why is it that evil does seem to not, it can't win even when it has a head start? You could think about the same thing in Nazi Germany. It's like, you know, Germany had a massive head start on the rest of the world in purveying evil and conquering it, and yet they didn't. And for whatever reason, the more, you know, we look back at history, things are painfully clear to us. Like, history, so something I'm going to try to do it this year. I'm kind of have a lot of projects going on right now, but I want to develop a book or some sort of work to break down how to read history. And I'll tell you why. It's because for a few years, I was really into personal development. And then for a few years after that, I realized most personal development is like poorly understood psychology. And so then I started getting into the psychological world. I started watching lectures. I started trying to, like, figure out things about myself. And then I realized, actually, if you could just read history correctly, it will tell you all of the things that you need to know about yourself, because history is about you. The problem is we don't often read it correctly. And so we end up, you know, typically, like, one thing that happens, I mentioned this in my second book, is that we read history and we always identify ourselves with the people that we think prevailed or the people that we considered good, right? So if you read history, you don't see yourself as a German guard, right? You don't. You see yourself as, like, the Anne Frank. But the reality is there is, like, one Anne Frank and there's tens of thousands of German guards, right? And so actually you should read history from all of the different angles, like as if you were all of the characters, because you are. Because as a human, you have all of the capabilities to do all of the things that humans throughout history have been able to do. Now, just because you repress those capabilities or choose not to see them in yourself doesn't mean that they're not there. And so I think that one thing that you can do is actually just read history correctly, and it will be the best self-help advice that you could ever imagine, because they're actually true. And what's interesting is it's more true than true, because it's transcendent, right? Because it's always applicable, because history is always repeating itself. These situations, life is very cyclical in that way. And so if you just read history correctly, you can get a decent idea. Another thing that we should do when we read history, again, all this will probably be in this work whenever I can get it out, really, it's one long drama, right? Like, we should read it as people, or evolution, we could say, that uses people to its ends, that's always evolving. And so new things are always emerging. And as they do, as new evolutions emerge, we can see, well, what are people like in that setting? How do people act in that setting? And where is the state of humanity now? So if you read it as one long drama, which I do, you come to this place where you realize that talk I gave a couple of weeks ago about how for most of, you know, we're talking hundreds of millions of years, the biological organisms on Earth existed within a dominance hierarchy. And so this idea that you and I are equal in some way, impossibly new, right? 2,000 years ago is the first time that it's made its way into the justice system and the injustice system. That's what it normally is. But these ideas of human dignity have just recently, 2,000 years ago, made their way into any kind of mainstream acceptance. But 2,000 years in the course of time is like less than a blink of an eye. We're working here. Like, we are constantly doing the work to try to give the people that come after us a better shake of things. What's interesting is not everybody is obviously possessed by good ideas. Not everybody is working so that the people that come later have a better shake of things or have a better reality. And when we look back at history, that becomes painfully clear, right? I said this on my Instagram a couple days ago, but when we read about, let's say, Hitler, for example, the only reason we are is because we're trying to figure out how you got so fucked up, right? How did he get so fucked up, and how did he convince other people to follow him? That's why we're reading about him. But the people we're celebrating, those are the Anne Franks, right? Those are the Viktor Frankls of the world. And people always ask, like, well, where was God during the Holocaust? It's like, well, read the work of Viktor Frankl. You can find out exactly where he was, coming through the most basic human needs, right? Coming through, emerging as the most basic human qualities, like character and will and strength and things that buttressed up against evil always seem to win, even when they don't, right? And that's the thing to understand, because it would seem in 1940s Germany that evil was surely going to win. It definitely had a head start on the rest of the world in stopping it, but somehow it didn't, right? And you gotta ask, why is that? Now, I think part of that, I think it's a self-defeating quality of Nemesis. Same thing that we talk about with Martin Luther King Jr. and his work is being, you know, expressed more and more, and obviously being built upon more and more, and his ideas are becoming more and more mainstream. And so right now you can look back, it's like, why are statues being torn down? It's like, right, because every single person that was on the wrong side of history always ends up losing, even if they don't. What's fascinating is if you read the Old Testament of the Bible, which is kind of difficult to do, like, just because culture was so different at then, but if you read it, what you see is a story of oppressive governments And then you see God leading his people to freedom. And then you see those freedom. Then you see those people who are led to freedom becoming the oppressors. And then he leads new people to freedom. And so it's this story, this long 6,000-year drama of humans constantly fucking it up, constantly oppressing each other, constantly not understanding that you and I are equal in this life. And so if we read history that way, we realize what we're up against, but we also realize that we have the opportunity to align ourselves with the thing that always, right? Not sometimes, but always, ultimately wins, and that is love, right? And I think that we should, again, this isn't like, I think it's very easy to read this kind of stuff, especially Martin Luther King, somebody that's, you know, this bigger than life character who doesn't exist anymore. It's like, it's very easy to think that these are all big up in the sky philosophies, but the reality is much different than that. The reality is that us making decisions in our individual lives are given a choice. And that choice is, do we align ourselves with something other than love? The problem is, if we do, we will find that throughout history, we will be crushed, right? We will not prevail. And that is just true. There's no other way to cut it. And I think that that provides us in 2020 with something really beneficial, because we can look back and we can tailor the decisions that we're making now, again, based on the way that we read history. But, you know, like I said, if you read history as you were always the person that triumphed and you always made the right choices, it's like, you know that you're not like that. But for some reason, when you read history, you see yourself as that. And like I said, I remember reading about the Civil War when I was in high school thinking, what? Like, wait, what? How did this happen? We had slaves and did what? We actually killed other Americans for our right to own other people? There's no way that that's true. Except it was. And now, I'm 33 years old, another civil rights movement breaks out, and I see, well, there's people defending it now. Like, those people exist now. So understand that this history is continuously repeating itself, but if we read it correctly, it shows us with great clarity what is often murky at the time, and that is that love always wins. Again, not sometimes, but always. And I think that really, you know, this will be the last episode that I do on the work of Martin Luther King Jr., at least for the time being, for you guys that have stuck with me for all five episodes. I really, really do appreciate it, and hope that you've been able to pull something interesting out of this, at least been able to get a little clarity around the things that we're going through now and realizing these are very deeply human struggles. And, you know, there's something about us, though, that is called to be better, something that is called to transcend those struggles. And I believe that it's all summed up with this final quote, which is what I want to leave you with. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word in reality." As far as we can tell, that's always correct. I love you guys. I hope you have an amazing 4th of July weekend. Starting next week, I'm going to be doing a series on the philosophy of heartbreak. That's not just romantic heartbreak, but all of the fallout and confusion and doubt and difficulties that we deal with when we try to live a life fully awake. So I hope you join me for the philosophy of heartbreak next week. Have a great weekend. Like I said, I love you guys. Talk later on Morning Coffee. Thinking about the ways I used to lie to me. Maybe someday we'll create some harmony. Thinking about a way to get what that I want. Maybe someday you'll